Hello everybody and welcome to this, the latest episode of the Rewatch Project with Hannah and Mike. I am Mike and with me, as always, is Hannah. How are you today, Hannah?
I'm well, thank you very much.
Go as far as saying hunky-dory?
No, definitely not hunky-dory.
Would you ever go as far as saying hunky-dory?
Occasionally, but it's school holidays. I don't think any mother is hunky-dory right
now. Not even tickety-boo?
No, it's cold. I had... 8 children in my house this afternoon.
Oh, that's not hunky-dory.
No, that's far it's not even tickety-boo. Hunky-dory. I mean, they're all lovely children, but you get 8 children in a small confined space when it's raining outside.
If there's 8, they can't all be lovely. I'm just saying, statistically, one of them has to be a murderer.
No, they were all lovely.
Okay. I'm guessing then that maybe... one of their parents might one day listen to this podcast.
No, but they're good kids.
Oh, okay, so that was actual sincerity.
Yes.
Okay. Well, before we get too much into Mum and Dad cast, as tempting a proposition as that is, we are talking about the... this is episode number 82 of the podcast, and we have reached the fourth episode of season 5... sorry... the fifth episode of season 4. I think you can see where I went wrong.
The sixth episode of season 4.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay, gosh.
We've already recorded episode
4. Oh, okay.
We just haven't put it out yet.
What I did was I went onto our webpage to see what the most recent episode we put is.
Yeah.
But let's pull the curtain back a little bit there. We've yet to put out the previous episode, so I would imagine that probably means we don't have any feedback.
No, we don't.
Because we haven't released the episodes to receive any feedback. But yes, we are talking about, rather confusingly, we are talking about the sixth episode of season 4 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., namely the episode The Good Samaritan. Hannah, do you want to tell us a little bit about this episode?
Sure. Synopsis says, the shocking origin story of Robbie's transition into Ghost Rider is revealed as the lives of Coulson and the team hang in the balance. It is directed by Billy Gearhart and...
well, it's a Jeffrey Bell one, isn't it, this week?
Yeah, written by Jeffrey Bell. Yeah,
co-showrunner, so...
story edited by DJ Doyle and Matt Owens.
So it's very much the A creative team
work here. And I said in the last episode that I was really looking forward to this one. I can't remember a huge amount about it, but it's the origin story of the Ghost Rider, so it's going to be good.
It's going to be good. Mm. A quick little bit of housekeeping, just a reminder that we do always appreciate feedback, regardless of the avenue that you choose to take
most
in that
deaf.
Regard. I think probably the best way to reach us is still to email us at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com. So if you want to just send us a traditional email or record an MP3 or a voice memo or however you want to do it, we would appreciate that. And also, you can find us on social media, namely Instagram and Twitter, where we are at RewatchProj. That's Rewatch, P-R-O-J. Also, we are part of the Pod Syndicate affiliate of podcasts, and that includes His Film, Her Movie, The Good, The Bad and the Odd, Chinstroker vs. Punter, Entertainment Landfill, and Film Bastards.
Chinstroker vs. Punter. Has a video podcast this week.
And yes, that's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But we also have just still the regular podcast on our normal feed.
But if you want to take a squiz at what Mike and Paul look like, then...
Well, they already know what I look like because of the Mark Singer interview.
Yes, and I thought you just said that you know what you look like.
Well, I have my suspicions.
Well, I should hope you do.
But yeah, so check that out. Also, it's probably worth following the Pod Syndicate's Twitter feed, which is just at Pod Syndicate, because we let you know when any of our friend shows go live there as well. Mm-hmm. So that is a useful thing to do. And of course, we always appreciate reviews on Apple Podcasts. So just Google the Rewatch Project Apple and fire us a review there. But no, I think we're probably going to get straight into this because, as we mentioned earlier on, it's been very
bring it on
short order since we recorded our last episode. So I think we're just really into the show at the moment, and we want to watch it. And if we want to watch it, we've got a podcast about it. So that's what's going on here. So what we'll do is we will hit pause on the recording. We will play you a promo for one of the aforementioned shows, and then we will be back to give you our thoughts, review, reactions to this episode, The Good Samaritan, episode number 6. of season 4 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So we will be back in 60 seconds.
Bye-bye.
Swear you'll listen to the good, the bad, and the odd. The good.
He has the cruelty of Jack Nicholson's Joker, the wit of Mark Hamill's Joker,
yeah,
and the laugh of Cesar Romero.
The bad.
He's bald, he's got a cat, he lives in a volcano. What else you need?
And the odd.
I've seen bits of it, it's really stupid.
Swear to me.
Just a couple of guys talking about movies. You can find us on www.thegoodthebadandtheodd.com.
What a beautiful podcast.
So, welcome back, everybody. We have just watched the 6th episode of Season 4 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., namely the episode The Good Samaritan. Hannah, what do you think?
Top marks from the team tonight. Also me for the alliteration.
Hey, top marks for the team. Very nice. It's like a Sun newspaper headline, isn't it?
Top marks for the team tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Bullied Bobby's Birmingham Boom Ball.
Boudoir.
Yes.
I thoroughly enjoyed the way they told the origin story mixed in with the current events.
Yeah, and the other flashbacks around the uncle as well. So
absolutely.
It was kind of...
And the way that it wasn't like... I like the fact that they didn't go do that sort of... Like it happens in a lot of like military films. They have the day comes up and it Monday, but it's like it's being typed while it's coming up on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's always very specific, like 0600 Monday, blah blah blah. I like the fact that they just put back in the day, like it's very.
And in the last episode, they had then and now.
Mm. Yeah, so it's very non-specific in terms of what kind of time frame you're looking at.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, and it's very comic book. You know, because the comic books aren't... I think the style depends on the show. Like, the X-Files always had that kind of typed thing, and it would always be very precise.
Yeah.
But that was because it was the X-Files, you know, so it had that procedural. And, and you know, I'd imagine that, you know, your CSIs and those shows...
FBI as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. So it's part of the language of the show, whereas...
you'd expect Fringe to be...
Yes. More whereas, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has more... a kind of irreverence about it, almost.
Yeah.
So it suits that.
Well, strange things happen every day. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it's not so much about when it happened, it's about what happened.
Yeah, it was in the past.
Yeah. I love the... I love the way Gabriel Luna plays before and after Ghost Rider. Like... you can see, like, I love the fact that beforehand he's got a fire in him, but like completely unintentionally.
No, that makes sense though. I mean, from a casting perspective,
but he's smiley and cheeky and
well, it's funny because when you see the flashbacks of him, he's obviously doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders.
No, this is exactly what I mean.
So it's a little bit like when you see flashbacks of May, and she's all smiling.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
I love it though because it heightens seeing how he is now. Like you can see the weight of all these souls on his life.
Well, it was funny. There was a moment where. Because I don't think Gabriel Luna, he hadn't done that much before this, so he obviously just impressed them in the audition. But the thing I've noticed that he does really well is soulfulness.
Yeah.
Like, there's a kind of a sadness to the way he plays the character. He just looks sad all the time. And that's something that it must be really difficult to do and maintain. It's almost that kind of slightly James Dean-y kind of...
Well, I take it as the more people he kills, whether it's for vengeance or not...
It takes a toll on him.
The Robbie part of him is having to cope with the fact that he's taken a life.
Yeah.
And that's where that very serious person comes from. And to see him light and smiley and, you know, sneaking off with his uncle's car.
And it's like, almost as though you need the contrast of the pre-Ghost Rider Robbie from the performance perspective to make you realise how much he's doing in that, in the later scenes.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, like,
because
you say,
you the do sort take of like, it for granted.
You just see it as part of the character. Mm. But when you have that point of contrast of this kind of sunnier, carefree kind of just, you know, Fast and Furious character, and you're like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, he's actually doing quite a lot. There's a lot of performance, but like all good acting, you know, unless it's that, you know, Olivier, Daniel Day-Lewis style performative, you know they're acting and that's where the skill lies. You realise how much really invisible performance there is there, because you're like, oh, okay, that's not, you know, seeing him being goofy. And it's, and again, it's very similar. The obvious one from pop culture history is Leonard Nimoy. You don't realise how much he's actually doing as Spock until you have a Spock gets a virus and gets emotions, and then you're like, wow, that's like a different person.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a great, I retweeted it the other day, there's an incredible, I still think one of the greatest pieces of acting ever is that famous moment with Christopher Reeve in Superman, where he's Clark Kent and he's going to tell Lois that he's Superman, and he takes his glasses off to tell her, changes his mind and puts them on. But if you watch that performance, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it, it's, he becomes a different person. You see him, he's there, and he's like nerdy kind of Clark, and he takes the glasses off and his entire posture changes, and it's like his face transforms and he's Superman. And then you see him have this little thought and he's like, no, I can't tell her. He puts them back on and he returns to being Clark Kent, and it's his most incredible piece of silent acting and pure performance. And I think that this is like that, you know, in the way that you've got the, you've obviously, you've got Robbie and then you've got his alter ego Ghost Rider, but you've also got pre-Ghost Rider Robbie and post-Ghost Rider, and they're different characters in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
And I mean, we've finished watching Fringe recently, and, you know, John Noble did a lot of that sort of stuff as well.
I think, I was about to say, I think all the main characters in Fringe get the rare opportunity to show their acting chops without spoiling anything, and definitely not saying any more specifically about any character.
But sci-fi gives you the opportunity to do certain things.
Yeah, 100%. And they all get a chance to really test the boundaries of what they can create in terms of character.
And I think that one of the reasons as well, it's funny because a lot of people, I mean, like your parents, for example, a lot of people just can't get past the sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
And it's like you with animation, you can't get past the animation
thing.
No, I
can't.
And I think what it is, is it's kind of like Shakespeare, I think, in a lot of ways, in that what science fiction and fantasy does is it opens up the storytelling and performance possibilities in a way that straight drama can't.
Yeah.
You know, like the fact that an actor could literally play a different version of their character. You know, you don't get to do that, really, on EastEnders, you know?
No.
And, you know, dramatic actors get to do it in some ways. I mean, for example, Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad, he does, in a long form, a transformative performance.
Yeah.
You know, like if you look
at kind of double life character shift.
Yeah, exactly. But science fiction and speculative fiction gives you an opportunity to do that in a much more extreme, exaggerated way. And I would imagine that the appeal to actors of that is very similar to the appeal of performing Shakespeare, where it's almost like the mechanisms of acting. Like, the analogy I use a lot is, it's a little bit like, you know, Prince does the big gig at the stadium and then goes to a club and jams with local blues musicians. It's a little bit like that. It's like, I think with science fiction, you get to really, in the same way that you do with Shakespeare, you get to really explore the mechanics and the kind of the sport of acting in some ways. And that's something that I didn't get. It's like when I was talking to Mark Singer from V, he was talking a lot, and I'll be honest, I like Shakespeare, I studied Shakespeare, I understand, I think, at least the ones I've studied. But I always thought, like a lot of people, that it's a bit wanky, you know? But when Mark Singer was talking about it, I think for the first time I really got it from an actor's perspective, because he was talking about, like I said to you, what's your favourite passage? And he delivered this one passage that was very clever wordplay, like a lot of word reversals and words that sounded the same. And I was like, it's like hip-hop. It's like Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's like the kind of playing with language and using clever turns of phrases. And it's sport. It's the sport of language and performance.
Oh, I think any good writer likes the sport of language.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, what can you do with these words and with, like, puns and all of these kind of things? And I think that it is, like, genre and theatre, because I think science fiction in some ways, science fiction television has as much in common, particularly back in the day when it was lower budget, has as much in common with theatre and radio as it does with cinema, you know?
Yeah.
But I think you see a lot of that. The other thing that I like about this episode is that they not only do they manage to spin numerous plates in regards to the various flashbacks, but they also are able to sew it together pretty seamlessly with all of the current stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed, though, John Hannah got a credit in this episode, but he wasn't in it, was he?
No.
I noticed at the beginning, in the guest stars, it was guest starring John Hannah, but
maybe,
I was like...
Maybe it was something in his contract.
Oh, what, he gets, like, the whole season or something.
Potentially. So what did you think of it?
No, I thought it was great. I had completely forgotten about the twist with the uncle.
Oh, I had remembered that, but I couldn't remember quite how it was brought to the front. Have you got our daughter's socks on?
Have I? Yep. Okay, well, it was in my sock drawer.
Because you probably put it in there. But
okay. Well, it just looks like a black sock.
They're not yours.
Okay, well, they fit.
On the bottom, it says size 13 to 3. You're stretching her socks out.
Oh, well, they're my socks now. So, should we get into the play-by-play?
Go for it.
Okay, just to sleep off on my phone. So, we open up with Back in the Day, as you pointed out earlier on, with the uncle in... he's got the car at this point, pre it being, you know, super tricked out and, you know, fiery.
Yeah.
We see him going to the lab and the experiment happening. And it was funny, I said jokingly when we were watching it that the device they were using looked like a Nutribullet blender. I'm pretty sure it was, and that's a regular sci-fi. I mean, going back to Star Trek, where they'd use salt and pepper shakers painted silver.
Yeah,
that, and you know, Geordi LaForge's eye thing being one of those hair clips. I was looking at it, and I was like, that looks just like it. And then he unscrewed the top and took it off, and I'm like, they've painted a Nutribullet silver for this.
Well,
and there's nothing wrong with that. You know,
in Star Wars, don't they use an ice cream maker for?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a classic. I mean, because you know, when you're doing sci-fi shit. Use whatever's around.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, but it's just that I, you know, often make breakfast with that. So I'm kind of like, I'm like, the dimensions were absolutely identical. So we see the uncle being very cynical about their experiments, like they're all sipping champagne. And basically he talks about how, look, you know, it's not possible because, you know, you would require more energy output than you started with. And that's against science.
Well, he can't see how they've gone from point A to point Z overnight, without, like, he knows there's a missing detail that,
and she talks about the book. And one thing that I think he's suggested is that there's a slight kind of ring of power thing about the Darkhold.
Yeah,
is that?
Oh, very much so.
Is that it's not like the uncle? I get the feeling that it's like the ring of power in the way that somebody who has an immaculate character might be able to resist it more. So with the uncle, it's not like he was evil, it was that he was ultimately weak and was able to be converted.
And perhaps, you know, a little bit jealous of the status that the lead scientists had, and wanted a bit of that. The Darkhold's kind of bought that.
And there's, you know, and there's, it's not really spoken about, but there is perhaps there is a slight racial dynamic as well. You know, the fact that often characters from those communities are depicted as being poor, or you know, at least not being part of, you know, the bourgeois, you know, and so she tells him about the book. We move back to the present and we see May and her team in the lab, and Lucy's gone as they're sort of sweeping the place. We see that Robbie's brother is becoming worried, and Daisy goes to him and takes him aboard the jet to take him to Robbie. And we see Mace giving Gemma an assignment, rushing her into it, and that causes...
And also being a wee bit of a bastard about it, like she's got to wear a hood.
Yeah.
He's not telling her anything. He looks very sort of like, I'm your boss. You pulled a fast one on me by, you know, evading the lie detectors. Yeah, I'm not going to be Mr.
Yeah, he's reasserting himself, isn't he? Yeah, absolutely. Daisy and Robbie kind of allow the brother to think that Robbie is a secret agent. He kind of jumps to that conclusion, and they don't dissuade him of that. We see that there is not enough power for the experiments and it's becoming dangerous. And that's why they need to go to this power plant, because just the sheer amount of energy it requires to do the experiment and, you know, unghost her is putting the larger world at risk.
Yeah.
So Mace comes for Robbie. We get the great Black Kojak line there as well.
Ironside and Black Kojak,
And you know that...
And this is the bit where... Oh, sorry, we're not quite at it.
No, go, we guess.
Just when Robbie breaks out as Ghost Rider and starts pounding the life out of Mace. And I just love the fact that Fitz gives the most fleeting little smile.
Yeah,
like,
satisfaction. Somebody's breaking through the bureaucracy. He says a lot as well about Mace, that he doesn't like Han Solo. He tells Phil that Robbie murdered someone and shows him the image. And you can see a slight reaction from Coulson that he's almost like, shit, okay, I didn't know that. You know, maybe... but he understands, he knows that there is ambiguity around how much actual control and therefore responsibility Robbie has over his actions. And he basically, and Mace basically says, look, you know, we can't be in business with a murderer. This is where I've got the note about how Gabriel Luna gives great sad face and that he's a, you know, very soulful actor.
Very much so.
And I think that that, you know, he's really good at doing that and focused killing machine, which again, I can see is how, you know, he would probably have got the Terminator gig. And I'd like to watch that Terminator film again. That's a fun movie, that is.
He was really good in it.
I thought everyone was really good in that film. It's just, it was a solid kind of rompy, it almost felt like an MCU film. And
because that was the one that sort of is supposed to be directly after T2.
Yeah, the idea is that you watch the original Terminator, T2, and then that. And that there...
And it does make sense.
Well, it was the first one that James Cameron was involved in since the first two. So he's always said that that's the trilogy, that that those three films. And it works like that.
It does work.
And, and also, it's great to see Arnie back to centre stage in those things as well, because, you know, he isn't Mr. B. So we start to get the flashback origin. We see that Robbie was a racer. And he's very smiley. He's talking about the Fifth Street crew as well, who obviously we saw in the in the previous episode.
And who had hinted that, you know, it was a hit.
Yeah.
Well,
I think the suggestion is that the hit was intended for the uncle because they were in his car.
Yeah, but you don't know that previously. Like you.
No, and there's a bit of a line of dialogue with the uncle later about that.
Like, there's... When you find out that it was a hit, you know, there's lots of reasons it could be. You know, you don't immediately think it's the uncle. You know, the reason that they were targeted.
Well, you also, I mean, I think partly because of the way it's put across that you think it's just some kind of weird street politics. You know, drive-bys or like, somebody, you know, pissed the wrong person off or...
He's taking all my money, drag racing.
Somebody... And I don't say this often, so it's going to sound weird coming from me. Somebody dissed somebody, perhaps? Could it be?
Oh, my God.
They, you know,
please do not ever say that
you
again.
You know, if there's one thing toughs can't abide, it's a dissing. Can you imagine that? You know, I can't abide being dissed.
You are nothing if not a hound dog.
Good day, sir. So they get shot at and crash, another bloody Dodge Charger, but one of the five remaining Dodge Chargers in the world gets trashed. And the brother says that he was sure that Robbie was dead. We see Fitz working in the lab, and he starts to suss what's going on. He starts to realise that really what they're after is power, the energy required to do this thing.
Metaphorical and literal.
Yes, exactly. So, and this is where the title of the episode comes in. So the Good Samaritan, the titular Good Samaritan, is this figure that that Gabriel, Robbie's brother, sees approach and seemingly revive, or, you know, rouse back to being to consciousness, because Gabriel thought he was dead. But of course, what we see is it's this figure on a motorbike, and it's not made explicit, but I think the assumption is that it's Johnny Blaze, the motorbike riding
Nicolas Cage,
that Nicolas Cage played, and that is probably that's the Ghost Rider I remember as a child. Mm. Although our helpful and informative and learned listeners have informed us that there is actually a third Ghost Rider who's quite well regarded in the comic books as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that he's been. There's a really great shot where you see him being, you see Robbie getting thrown from the car, and the camera sort of pulls up in slow motion in that kind of bullet timey kind of way. And
I really like that sequence.
The idea that in that instance, he made a deal with the devil, that basically he cried out to the universe, "I'll do anything if he lives," and basically the spirit inhabiting the Ghost Rider was the kind of, you know, the angel of death that heard the call. And sort of like came in. And I like the fact as well that he's like, yeah, and then, you know, I was revived. And it's like that Daisy's line of dialogue, she's like, don't stop there, you know, tell him. And I was thinking that what she's really thinking is, don't stop there, tell him about the firehead.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of a key a key thing here.
Part of me just felt like she was really into the story and was like, what happened next?
Do go on.
And then who dissed who?
Yes.
Whom dissed whom?
Yes. It was a thing inside me, he says. So this is where we've got this idea of responsibility. The moment I like, which I think is actually quite subtle in this episode, is when Robbie says to his brother, I did it for you. And his brother's like, I'm fine.
Mm.
Don't put this
on
me.
Put that shit on
and you
me.
See, it cuts to Daisy for a second, and she has this weird moment. And I think what's happening there is she's having a personal epiphany because of the similarities of what's going on. Mm. There's a subtextual thing going on here where basically she's realised that she's been off moping and blaming herself and all this kind of stuff when it's just not needed and it's not helpful.
And also, if Lincoln was there, he'd 100% be having that.
Yeah, he'd be like, you know, don't cry for me, Argentina. You know,
he'd be saying to her, don't blame your behaviour on me. Yeah. Don't give yourself a pass because you think you're doing this in my name.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like you don't use me as an excuse to be an April Levine fan, you know. Whoever April Levine is. April Levine. Her sister. So we see Daisy realise that basically blame is bad. Yeah. We see that Mace figures out where they are. He finds them. So he's not a dumb guy. And I think that's the other thing as well, is I think that he's one of those people, he Columbos people a little bit. I think he uses his sort of shucks persona to knock people off.
Lull people into a false sense he's got no idea what's going on.
But he's what he reveals is when he was last there, he took everything in. He looked around and was like, right, okay. He took full inventory of it. And when he came back, he's like, I know that over there was this thing and it's gone, so that's where they must be.
Mm.
So Mace tells them to turn the plane around. Coulson tries to reason with him. I like the line, it's a compelling argument for Hail Satan. Mace and Robbie fight after Robbie punches his way out of the supposedly unpunch-outable.
I love it when Fitz goes, that's not possible. That is so you. You'll tell me that something is 100% definitely going to happen a certain way, and then I will prove to you that it won't, and you'll say, well, that's just not possible. It just shouldn't happen. It's like, but it did. Fucking deal with it.
Yes. His head was on fire, Mike. just accept it. But we see his brother talk him down. It's the classic kind of, give the Hulk a hand job and he'll slowly turn
Sun's
back
into... real low.
Yes. So he convinces Mace... Well, Coulson convinces Mace to let Robbie help. And basically, well, what seems to keep happening with Robbie is that people think he's dangerous. He's really bloody useful. Mm. So the uncle goes to see Joe, who freaks out. And this is in the flashback. And the uncle comes to Lucy and says that, look, he's insane. We've got to get the book away from him. He wants to be a god and all this kind of stuff. So they hit the power plant, the S.H.I.E.L.D. team do, because they realise that it's just too analog for them to be able to hack.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to, like, physically go
in. Internet.
Exactly. They find the Darkhold. And it's really interesting to note that Coulson says to May that she's the only one he trusts to hide it, because basically they get there and it's lying around and he's like, actually, this is the most important thing. Mm. Forget all this Ghost Rider stuff and all this power plant stuff. Really, the big problem here is this book.
Mm.
And I think that what he's saying when he says you're the only one that I trust, I don't think he's casting dispersions over the rest of the team, but I think that he's looking at this Moringa power perspective, and I think that he probably feels that May is the least corruptible, the most staunch sort of person in the team.
The least likely to open it just to take a little peek.
Yeah, like she's got, like, you can imagine Fitz just not been able to resist. He'd have to press the big red button if there was a big red button in the room, you know?
He's a scientist. It's natural curiosity.
Well, look at all the stuff that's going on with him and Ada and and the Batty Artist, you know. That's who, classic sort of scientific hubris, and apologies for the rain, guys. That's all Hannah's fault, and
she will
think about what she's done.
You're going to get a bit of a slapping later.
I think you should strangle me with the
what that
cord.
You keep standing on.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, it works fine. Look, it doesn't
cord
interrupt
that you
it.
Keep standing on with your daughter's socks on.
I think only one of them is actually.
No, they're both.
But this one doesn't have that. No, they're different. They're different material. Look. Oh, no, they are the same. It's impossible, Hannah.
Ace and cord.
I mean, the thing is, though, in fairness to me, and I'm not going to go on a huge tangent here, this cracks me up because all of my partners have told me this. It's like the famous Tom Waits line about how I've been in the same relationship all my life, but with just different women. And I think what it is that it always cracks me up when people say, you always have to be right, or you always, and it's like, doesn't everybody feel like that? It's like, you always think you're right. It's like, well, of course I do. I'm not always right, but I always think I am. Why else would I be arguing, I'm fucking wrong about this, but I'm going to keep going.
But it's just your absolute dogged belief that you're right.
Well, of course I am. Everybody thinks that about themselves.
To the exclusion of everybody around you, when it's so blatantly obvious you're wrong.
But the alternative is to be somebody who is always...
Considers other person's opinion?
Always second-guesses themselves and thinks, and in a confrontation assumes that they're the wrong.
Yeah. Hello. Welcome to my life.
Well, you know, I've clearly made you like that. No, but I think that I think it's a positive... All positive attributes have an underbelly.
Yeah.
You know, and in the same way that if you're the sort of person who thinks, oh gosh, yeah, I probably am wrong because they seem really sure about it, you know, which is more your side of the spectrum. There's the positive side of that is that it means that you're super considerate and empathetic, and people are probably like that. So with me, it's like, on the one hand...
They are, that douchebag thinks he's right again.
Yeah, but look at his confident gait. Anyway, shut your face.
I like the fact you blushed mid reasoning then.
I didn't blush.
You did.
Didn't
you? Absolutely,
I was,
did.
I was fired up.
I'm looking at you. You blush.
I don't blush.
You fucking blush. I've been married to you long enough to know when you blush.
Why would I blush? What was blushable about that?
Because you realised you were wrong.
About which bit specifically? Sorry, we're back on the socks again now, aren't we? Anyway, come on.
This is how every conversation goes, listeners.
Hey, Hannah, shut up.
Never!
So he tells Maeve she's the only person that he trusts with the ring of power. We see Lucy says that the uncle went power mad and became a baddie. We see the Ghost Rider dash Robbie fires her up.
I like the fact that he doesn't give her a pass just because she's exposed that he's that the uncle has got nefarious means as well. Yeah. Like,
no, she's still evil.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, let's burn you to a crisp.
And I get the impression that the Ghost Rider is kind of like a...
Act first and ask questions.
No, later. He's kind of like a moral lie detector.
Yeah.
It's like, somebody's like, oh, what gives you the right to be, you know, judge, jury, and executioner? But it's as though, in the same way that, like, Thor's hammer knows who is worthy, the ghost just knows if your soul is rotten, well, basically.
It's like the scales in Moon Knight.
Where
you either, you know, fall off the boat or you go to heaven.
Yeah. It's a objective truth.
Mm.
At least that's how it's presented.
Yeah.
So we see that it's true, that the uncle basically planned the whole thing and kind of pulled the strings to get them there. We see the episode ends with him basically mastering creating matter. And also, there's no post-credits scene, so we get the shots of New York over the end credits of Friends because some crazy shit's happened and they don't want to spoil it by going on to the next scene. So, shit gets real in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when it goes, you know, you get the logo come up, and then usually, like I was thinking, probably because I saw the John Hannah character name, I thought, oh, we're probably going to get like a scene with him and Ada at the end, like something that's somewhat tangential to the plot lines that were explored in the episode. But no, straight to credits. They haven't even got time to piss about. So any final thoughts, Anna? We've gone for about an hour in total, so solid. Yeah, any final thoughts before you tell us about what we're going to be covering next time?
Just thought it was a thoroughly enjoyable episode. Loved how they weaved in the origin story, and can't wait to keep watching.
It's funny, you know what I'm really looking forward to? I mean, I love doing this podcast, don't get me wrong, but I'm looking forward to, in a few years' time, doing a rewatch of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and being able to just whack the next episode on.
Yeah.
You know, without any pomp and circumstance. But no, I agree, I really like this episode as well.
There's definitely been times that we're like, I just want to watch another one.
Yeah, yeah. It's usually, in the earlier seasons, it's usually when we're about three or four episodes from the end of the season. Mm. There's always this slight increase in momentum that occurs. But anyway, yes, next week, Hannah, what are we doing? Or next time, I should say, because it'll probably end up being after tomorrow, the rate we're going.
Okay, so the next episode, episode 7, is called Deals with Our Devils. I'm not going to read the plot synopsis.
Okay, are you going to tell us who wrote and directed it?
I am. It is directed by Jesse Bochco and written by DJ Doyle.
Cool.
And edited by Matt Owens.
Solid.
So, yeah, really looking forward to it.
Okay. Is there a spoiler in the...
Well, I think it's a little bit spoilery, but it could just be the way it's written. I want to talk to you about it. So,
okay, cool.
We'll reveal it next time.
Okay, well, that's us for today, guys. Just remember, please note that we do appreciate emails at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Check out our friends' shows and find us at rewatchproj, that's rewatch proj, on social media. And if you listen to us on YouTube, please do feel free to feedback in the forms of just messages on the threads. And yeah, that's us for this week, guys. We will see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.